You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.
To the Daily Nationalist. Today's date is Tuesday, the 26th of January, 2021, and you're listening to me, Sven Longshanks, streaming at radioalbion.com. Well, we've got some positive news to get into today, one of those rarest of news stories, and we actually have two to get into. The first one comes from Poland, and it's about censorship. Poland's Deputy Justice Minister has called on the United States to protect every citizen from big tech censorship on social media as his own country prepares new laws enforcing free speech standards online. And this is something we've been hearing about for a while. Hungary are very concerned about this as well. The fact that people are being removed from the social media networks, not for breaking the law, but for having the wrong political opinion. Of course, we're told that Poland has a so-called far-right government. They don't have a far-right government. They just have a patriotic government. It's a civic nationalist government that seeks to protect freedom of speech for their people. Polish lawmaker Sebastian Kaleta said it was disturbing that Christian or patriotic content was increasingly being branded as hate speech by the big tech firms which dominate social media, and that the public discourse should not be controlled by anonymous moderators. And this is a point that really doesn't get made enough. It's Christian content. It's people that support Christian morality and the Christian laws on morality. People that speak out against abortion, that speak out against homosexuality and feminism and people getting divorced and no-fault divorce. All these things are Christian topics. They're Christian ideals. And yet we're now told that they are beyond the pale. They are somehow far right. And if it was any other religious group that was being outlawed in this way, we would be told it was anti-Semitic or Islamophobia. But because it's Christians that are being censored like this, nobody says anything about it. They seem to be fair game for this. Of course, you should be able to criticize whatever you like. You shouldn't have. We should not have certain subjects or certain topics or certain people groups that are beyond criticism. That means we are an unequal society. For all the talk that we have about equality, we are incredibly unequal. We're supposed to all be equal under the law, but of course we quite clearly aren't if we have certain groups that are above the law. Mr. Kaleta explained that while other European countries such as Emmanuel Macron's France and Angela Merkel's Germany are already regulating big tech in a way that allows them to force social media to delete some content, Poland is approaching the online public square from the opposite direction, with legislation to prevent legal content from being censored. And this is the point as well. The government are supposed to guarantee free speech, but the argument has been, well, these are private companies, so the private companies can remove whatever speech they like. And of course, these social media companies, the big tech, they work hand in glove with the government. So it means that the government can enforce speech laws through the private companies and pretend that it's not them that are actually doing it. Like in America, they can pretend that they're still upholding the First Amendment because the government aren't removing Donald Trump from social media, it's the social media companies. But as we have seen, when these social media companies are being questioned in Congress, they don't punish them at all. And it's quite obvious that the politicians are subservient to the big tech directors. People like Sergey Brin and Jack Dorsey in particular appears to be above these senators. And we see that nothing is done to actually rein them in. All these threats are made, but nobody actually carries through them, because in actual fact, the social media companies are carrying out the wishes of the government. And it's the same in Germany, and it's the same in France. The minister told American broadcaster Glenn Beck that many publishers, many politicians right now, are interested in our concept because we saw that freedom of speech is in danger and we want to protect it, referencing the mass banning of former US President Donald Trump ahead of Joe Biden's inauguration and Poland's own dark history of censorship under communism. And it wasn't just the fact that Donald Trump was banned from social media. During the actual election campaign, they banned the New York Post, the New York Post URL, from even being shown on Twitter for a week to hide the news story that was less than flattering about Joe Biden's business contacts, particularly his son Hunter Biden, when the laptop was found with all the incriminating information on it. And of course, Twitter hid that from the American public, along with removing all the supporters of Donald Trump in massive censorship cuts during that election run, where we saw all of QAnon got removed, all of R the Donald at Reddit, that got removed. Just millions of people that supported Donald Trump were banned from communicating. And you have the issue of election interference here as well. And of course, we recently saw Uganda ban the social media networks entirely during the election because they didn't want their election to be interfered with in the way that the American election was. While many conservatives say they accept the right of tech giants to ban, shadow ban, and restrict or remove the content of social media users, if reluctantly, because they are private companies, Mr. Coletta compared them to, among other things, the telephone networks. And this is the point. These social media networks are now the public square. What is the difference between communicating to your followers on Twitter or on Facebook or on Telegram, or having a group conversation on your telephone? There's no difference to that. And when these companies started out, that's why they were given the protections that they were given. They were given the protections from being sued for anything that was said on there, because they were said to be public platforms and not publishers. And the minute that they start censoring opinions on there, they cease to be platforms and they become publishers. And the censorship has now become so much on Twitter that you see patriots putting up Democratic Party symbols or Marxist symbols, Labour Party symbols, sending out tweets pretending to support left-wing organisations or groups out of fear that they're going to lose their account if they don't start doing that. So people are actually having to put up false political views, fake political views in support of the government out of fear of being removed. How is that any different to what went on in the USSR? And how is that any different to China, really, where you're not allowed to criticize the Communist Party? Well, in America now, you're not allowed to show support for the former government of Donald Trump without being accused of being a domestic terrorist now. All these companies started out as private enterprises, he argued in his podcast interview referring to the telephone companies, but evolved into regulated public utilities with democratically accountable oversight as their use became ubiquitous. And it would not be considered acceptable to ban people from using telephones for expressing the wrong opinions while using them. And it's also similar to the postal service, isn't it? If you write out a letter and you send the letter to all the people on your list, How is that any different to sending out a tweet to all the all your followers? There's no difference to it, is there? It's the same as the telephone and the mail service. And yet we have allowed these groups to pretend that it's something different and that they have a right to censor our speech. He says, there are many dangers in big tech companies which we should face, expressing concern at the creation of monopolies from which every citizen must be protected. The rights of every one of us should be protected to preserve democracy itself. And this is another issue here with these monopolies, where Twitter basically has a monopoly, Facebook basically has a monopoly, and they're all working together like a mafia group. When somebody gets banned from Facebook, they also get banned from Instagram, they also get banned from Twitter. And then you have Apple moving in there and banning stuff. When Alex Jones got banned, he was banned from Facebook, I think, and YouTube first, and then it was Twitter. They all collude together to remove alternative opinions from the public square. What is democratic about that? Democracy means the idea that is the most popular wins. And the internet was very democratic originally. Whatever was the most popular would rise to the top of the search results. Whoever got the most likes would have some credibility. People would want to listen to the person who had the most likes and the most followers. Now they're even removing the dislikes of Biden's YouTubes. This is a new thing that's come out in the last couple of days. Because there were so many dislikes on Biden's inauguration speech on YouTube, they removed them. They hid the democratic will of the people. Never mind the fact that it only had a few hundred thousand views as well, unlike the millions of views that Donald Trump's speeches used to get. Mr. Coletta had previously elaborated on these points in an article for Newsweek, recalling how Poland suffered under Soviet-imposed communism for 45 years and endured decades of censorship, and was therefore particularly sensitive to any attempts to curtail freedom of speech. So this man has the right to compare what's going on to the Soviet Union because he lived under it. We do not seek the power to remove any content from social media. Rather, we simply want to ensure that lawful content is not removed, he emphasized, much as he did when debating the issue on the podcast. In Poland, we have watched with alarm as a consortium of ever more powerful monopolistic big tech companies have done what was once unthinkable, deplatforming a sitting US president, Coletta wrote, insisting that the conventional conservatarian arguments against regulation were now outmoded. Sadly, for years, we have all been told that private companies are entitled to act as they please. If you don't like our social network, just build your own, goes the well-worn quip. But the rapid exclusion of Parler has finished off this argument once and for all, he lamented. With Amazon refusing to host Parler and Apple and Google removing the app from their app stores, big tech killed the competition before it could even meaningfully take off, he pointed out. And we even see the same thing happening here with the alternative media. We see groups like Red Ice getting hundreds of thousands of views, sometimes getting up to millions of views, getting more views than CNN for their news reports on YouTube. And we see Red Ice just being removed from YouTube. All their followers being told, sorry, you can't watch that anymore. And in their place, at the top of the search rankings, we see CNN being put there. So in actual fact, the mainstream media is using the censorship excuse to remove the competition. They can't stand to have competition, even when it's just independent alternative observers like us here at Radio Albion. They can't stand to have any competition at all. So they use this censorship excuse to deplatform their competitors. Instead of using their competitors to build up their strength and to learn what they're doing wrong and have a fair competition, they just remove the competitors. Again, how is that democracy? It's not. It's tyranny. It's a big tech tyranny that we're living under. For the Polish statesman, guaranteeing citizens' recourse against big tech arbitrariness is a first step in the direction of orienting the internet towards the public good, and that the arbitrary exclusion of voices and even companies from the internet makes it clearer than ever that social media companies are not just platforms but publishers, and not merely publishers either, but monopoly gatekeepers for the rapid transmission of information to the public at large. I mean, it's almost like they are the people that produce the paper that you write upon, and you're being told that you can't use the paper, you can't use paper to write upon because they don't like what it is that you're writing. And it's incredible, the restriction on freedom of conscience that there is here, because they're saying if your conscience tells you that you should be speaking up about something that we don't want you to speak about, we're just going to silence you so that you can't speak. So it's not just freedom of conscience, freedom of speech that's been affected here. It's also freedom of conscience. And people are too frightened to say what they actually think, say what actually comes from the heart, because they might well be removed from the ability to talk to all their friends. Don't forget, people may have built up these social media accounts over the years, and they will have built up a relationship with some of the people on there. They will have had private messages that they like to refer back to, and they just lose the whole lot because their opinion is a different opinion to Jack Dorsey's, or it's a different opinion to the Democratic Party. I guess you could say it's better than actually jailing these people for their opinions, but we see that as well, don't we? We see lots of people that have been jailed for having the wrong opinion, criticising the wrong people group. You can criticise whites, of course. That's the only group that it is okay to criticise. 2,000 years ago, the Roman comedian Juvenal asked, "Who will watch the watchers?" In the case of big tech, I believe that the answer lies with the people, he said, echoing similar arguments advanced by James Pinkerton on Breitbart News. And that's the way that it was, when you could like tweets and dislike them. Do you remember when you were able to dislike tweets? That got removed, didn't it? They removed that so that people could no longer show that they actually didn't like what was being said in a tweet, and you're only allowed now to like it. But that's the way that these things should be moderated. If people don't like what somebody is saying, they could downvote it. Nobody has to read what somebody else is saying. It's not like people are being forced to read what Donald Trump's Twitter feed says. It's not like anybody is forced to read what somebody says on Facebook. These people that are calling for censorship are, in effect, kicking down somebody's front door of their own home and demanding that you stop saying something that they don't want to hear. Well, if you just stayed outside the house and minded your own business, you wouldn't have to hear something that you don't want to hear. And the audacity of thinking that this is an okay thing to do, to just crash into somebody else's conversation and demand that they stop talking about whatever it is they are talking about when they weren't even talking to you. It's incredible that it's got this far without anybody pointing this out. I'm very grateful for Poland for taking a stand on this. Poland's own draft law on social media censorship will see social media users given a right to appeal bans and content removal to tech firms, with the possibility of further appeals to a new free speech board appointed by the Polish legislature. This free speech board will be empowered to order the restoration of accounts and posts if it finds they were punished for lawful speech, and to levy fines up to 50 million zloty, roughly £9.8 million or $13.4 million, on firms which do not comply with its rulings. And that is absolutely fantastic, because that means there is a serious threat there if Facebook or YouTube or Twitter remove any posts which are not actually unlawful posts. if they start removing stuff just because they don't like the opinion and there's no violent threat in there, then they will be fined and they should be fined. It's not like they're removing people for making credible direct threats of violence. They are removing people for being critical of government policies. The Hungarian government, which aligns closely with the Polish government, has also vowed to take action against the shadow banning of Christian, conservative and right-wing voices online. And the Hungarian government have actually set up their own equivalent of Facebook and Twitter. I forget the name of it now, but Radio Albion has a registered account on there. Perhaps they will move forward to take up the role of Facebook and Twitter if they get popular and if English language users start to frequent the site. So great news from Poland there, and we also have good news from Denmark. Denmark's Prime Minister Mette Frederiksen has set a target of zero new asylum seekers as her government's new goal, citing concerns that too many migrants will affect the social cohesion of the country. Well, how about she points out that they're all fake asylum seekers as well, because there's no war going on in Sweden or Germany or the Baltic states or any of these countries that these so-called asylum seekers pass through on their way to get to Scandinavia. But it's good enough that she is pointing out that this does affect the social cohesion of a country. The Danish Prime Minister stated her goal on Friday at the Danish Folketing. What a great name that is, the Folketing. I do like that. Saying, we cannot promise zero asylum seekers, but we can set out the vision that we also did before the elections. Namely, that we want a new asylum system. And then we do what we can to introduce it. The Social Democrat leader went on to add that too few past politicians had done enough to integrate migrants and said that they had made too few demands of them, broadcaster TV2 reports. So she's basically giving this excuse here that the migrants aren't integrating, which obviously they're not going to integrate because they come from a different extended kinship group. And other governments might say, well, we must do more to integrate them. We should give them free driving lessons and free English lessons and give them free interpreters and all that sort of nonsense that Sweden does. But instead of that, she's saying, well, they're not integrating and we've had enough, so we don't want any more. According to the broadcaster, Prime Minister Frederiksen stated that migrants must be able to support themselves financially and adapt to Danish values. We must be careful that there are not too many coming to our country, otherwise our cohesion cannot exist. It is already challenged, she said. Last year, Prime Minister Frederiksen highlighted crimes committed by non-Western migrant men and promised that her government would crack down on them. One in five young men from non-Western backgrounds who were born in 1997 had breached the penal code before the age of 21. One in five, she said. It is nothing new, and that's the problem. It's been going on for too many years. Girls are called derogatory things because they are Danish, or girls are subjected to social control because they have become too Danish. A sausage cart in Brønshøj is attacked with firecrackers because it sells pork, Frederiksen observed. The Danish leader went on to state that police need to crack down on crime in vulnerable no-go areas, where she claimed 1% of the population commits around half of all the crime. Imagine that, 1% of the population carries out 50% of all the crime, and that 1% of the population are newcomers. Migrant crime remains a major problem in Denmark, with a report released last year claiming that half of the young men from Somalia, Lebanon and Morocco had been convicted of a crime before the age of 30, with the rate increasing to 62% for Somalians in particular. So over half of all the Somalians in Denmark have been convicted of a crime before the age of 30. And to be convicted of a crime, rather than just let off with a caution, it means that it has to be a pretty serious crime that they are involved in. I dare say they have very high unemployment figures as well. I mean, just what do the Somalians bring to Denmark that the Danes can't actually do for themselves? Former Danish Immigration and Integration Minister Inger Støjberg wrote in August last year that mass migration had harmed Denmark more than helped, saying there is a marked overrepresentation of immigrants or descendants from non-Western countries in Danish prisons. Immigrants and descendants from non-Western countries are overall overrepresented by 255% relative to their actual share of the population in Denmark, she said. Earlier this week, Minister for Immigration and Integration Mattias Tesfaye spoke about the need to confront political Islam in Denmark as well, saying Denmark doesn't have to adapt to Islam, Islam must adapt to Denmark. Liberal Party immigration spokesman Mads Fugleidi agreed with Tesfaye's statements and added that if we didn't have immigration from Muslim countries, we wouldn't have integration problems either. Exactly. If we didn't have Islamic immigration, you wouldn't have Islamic terrorism. If you didn't have Muslims in your countries, you wouldn't have grooming gangs predominantly made up of Muslims. In 2020, Denmark took in just 531 asylum seekers, largely due to the travel restrictions caused by the outbreak of coronavirus. But its neighbour Sweden still took in 9,621 of these asylum seekers. So by aiming for zero asylum seekers, they're really not bringing the numbers down that much, but it is a start. I mean, they should be looking at just zero immigration from these non-white countries. They quite clearly don't bring anything of any benefit to Denmark if they are overrepresented by 255% in the prisons and involved in crime. The number of asylum seekers entering Sweden in 2020 was not only larger than that of Denmark, but it was also around three times more than all of its Scandinavian neighbours combined. Of course, Finland is pretty good on this as well. I think Norway is pretty leftist, but as we know, Sweden is the most leftist country out of the lot, the humanitarian superpower, as they like to call themselves, with the most number of rapes occurring in that country than anywhere else. They're actually second only to Africa for the number of rapes that occurs in Sweden. At least you can say they do have some pretty robust protections for free speech. The Nordic Resistance Movement out of Sweden is probably the leading nationalist movement in Europe, and there are lots of attempts to shut them down, and so far the courts have upheld free speech. So much as Sweden is a very left-wing liberal type of country, they do appear to allow some multiplicity of opinion there, at least some diversity of opinion. So great news from Denmark here, and great news from Poland here. So it's not all bad, is it? We do sometimes get good things happening that we can talk about here at Radio Albion. Well, thank you very much for listening. I will be back tomorrow with more of the Daily Nationalist for you. God bless and hail victory.
You're listening to Radio Albion, talk radio for the nationalist community.